Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, Sports City. Your boys are back in the building. Welcome to the Monday Night Sport Wrap-Up. We got 60 minutes to jump into this thing. I'm going to try my best to get through everything that I got here. Got a lot of stuff to jump into, a lot of interesting things to look at from here on out. But Sports City, we got this food for thought. Hopefully y'all are doing these dishes. I done took off this blazer, loosened up the tie, stepped aside. The kitchen timeless is alive. Let's go, Sports City. Welcome to the Monday Night Sport Wrap-Up. I'm happy.
Listen, first the Fat Boys break up. Now every day I wake up. Somebody got a problem with hoes. What's up, y'all niggas all fed up because I got a little cheddar and my record's moving out the store. Young fuckers spitting at me. Young rappers getting at me. My nigga Big predicted this shit exactly. More money, more problems. Gotta move carefully. Cause faggots hate when you getting money like athletes. Young as ice grilling me. Oh, you not feeling me? Fine. It costs you nothing. Pay me no mind. Look, I'm on my grind, cousin. Ain't got time for fronting. Sensitive thugs, y'all all need hugs. Damn, little mans, I'm just trying to do me. If the record's 2 mil, I'm just trying to move 3. Get a couple chicks, get them to try to do E. Hopefully they're Menards before I reach my garage. I don't want much, fuck, I drove every car. Some nice cooked food, some nice clean drugs. Bird ass niggas, I don't mean to ruffle y'all. I know you waking in the wing, but I'm doing my thing. Where's your love?
Okay, the call number is 917-889-9592. Like I said, you got the next 60 minutes locked and loaded with Sports City. Y'all could have been anywhere else in the world, but you're here with the chefs. And like I said, Sports City, help deal with me, man. We having technical difficulties. I'm hoping BTR can get this together, man. I'm having hiccups here, but I'm going to try my best to get through it. So just rock with us. We're going to do the best that we can, man. I got my brother, my co-host, Nostradamus, a.k.a. Mr. Knight. Welcome to the wrap-up. How are you feeling this evening?
I'm good.
Okay, so until the people start to get into the kitchen, it's just me and you, but I know I don't have no problem rocking with you and getting everything off of my chest that I need to now. I got an interesting question before I start to try and delve into some of the bigger matters in the NFL right now throughout the weekend that just went past, and also how it is starting to get tight toward the end of September and get to the month of October, because some people, including the team that I love, is fighting for a playoff spot as well. Interesting situation here. This is what I want to get to before we start to fill up in the kitchen. I have written down, got the notice earlier today, that the Carolina Panthers agreed to trade for Jared Allen. Now, here goes an interesting situation. And I'm twisting this one up for City. I'm spicing the hell out of this dish. If you think hell is a curse word, I apologize, but I'm spicing the hell out of this dish, and I apologize if it's wrong. But let me tweak this. So, interesting situation. Carolina goes after Jared Allen. They're getting him. And here's why I bring this up. Rivera, being a former Chicago guy, goes back to Chicago and gets a quality guy from Chicago. Now, just a few years back, this is the same organization that went to Carolina and got Julius Peppers for that $21.4 million per before he ended up, well, you know, he ended up going to Green Bay afterward, but he ended up signing a big old deal while he was in Chicago or what have you. So it's like these two have an interesting line for the defensive end position, and let alone how these teams are kind of like, you know, tied together with Rivera being a former Chicago guy and they're, you know, kind of trading off for defensive end even though Peppers not there any longer. One, I want your thoughts on, you know, the way that I twisted this dish around. And two, how much of an impact can Jared Allen bring to a Panthers team that's off to a 3-0 start?
Well, I mean, I don't get the Ron Rivera-Chicago connection really doesn't matter because Jared Allen wasn't there when he was there. But, I mean, Charles Johnson is hurt. The dude Alexander's hurt. The kid Ely hasn't gotten a sack. Keekly's hurt. The three other linebackers have one sack apiece. None of their defensive linemen, I believe, have any sacks. So it's a good move for Carolina. It puts Jared Allen back at the position he's supposed to play, which is a 4-3 end and not a stand-up linebacker. He's a guy who plays with his hand in the dirt. This is not a guy you want as a linebacker. It was stupid for Chicago to play him out of position. So for him, he's going back to a system that he knows how to play in. For Carolina, it gives them somebody off the edge because they don't no longer have Hardy. Charles Johnson, as I said, they don't have anybody. And, you know, for the money they have to give him, $800,000, that's nothing to get a pass rusher of that quality. So for Carolina, it's all good.
That is true that they do get him on the cheap, but it's interesting. And I'll save it as we get further into the show because I want to tweak Chicago's situation, but I'm not going to start picking on them early. We do have Nacho in the building. Nacho, welcome to the wrap-up. How are you feeling this evening?
Well, feeling good, feeling not so hot today. Not a bad day out here on the West Coast or in Arizona.
Okay, so your thoughts on the news that we talked about outside of the kitchen before the show started, your thoughts on Jared Allen's impact toward the Panthers and how interesting of a lead, shall I say, with Rivera to Chicago and vice versa with Carolina to Chicago as well, because this is the same two teams that got rid of, ended up dispensing one defensive end, Julius Peppers, while Julius Peppers was in his heyday, causing all types of mayhem off the edge. Now they go after a Jared Allen, who is 33 as of this year, and how much juice he has left in the tank to help this team right now in the NFC South, where they are leading the division once again. Your thoughts on this Carolina Panthers-Chicago Bears tie-in, if you will.
And then on that note, the last time the Panthers went 3-0 is when they went to the Super Bowl. So you can imagine the excitement from Panther Nation from the outstanding start, especially in this division and the way that it's going. Jared Allen added onto this roster. It is a good pickup. It's decent. I like it. I believe the Bears have paid him most of the money, so they'll be paying him, if I'm not mistaken, and the Panthers will take over the rest of it. However that works, I'm not 100% sure, but for what they get, it's a good pickup. Now, with Luke Kuechly and the concussions and when he's going to come back 100% healthy and things of that nature, but with him, Jared Allen being able to free rush on the outside and not have to worry about too much like he did in Chicago and the things weighing on him and the city weighing on him, especially with the way they were playing, this is a more relaxed environment as it pertains to the team. And obviously going from an 0-3 to a 3-0, the environment in the locker room is going to be a better paced environment. You're going to feel better. You're going to want to join right away in with this winning ways, and you want to show that the zero sacks you've gotten in Chicago thus far in 2015 is not indicative of the player that has gotten 100, I think, in 34 sacks through his total career. So this is a guy who wants to prove he can still get some sacks, a la Julius Peppers at the end of his career. Being, tossed from his beginning team in Minnesota to Chicago, trading now to the Panthers. Julius doing almost the same thing and trading from one team to another team and then finally finding his way again. So I think this is a way where Jared Allen can maybe get a couple sacks, have a couple impactful plays maybe on that one side of the ball on defense and help this team out. They've been able to do it without a significant pass rush. In Carolina, this may be able to help, like I said, with the addition of Luke Kuechly coming back, depending on when he's 100%. That may be a nice little addition to the defense to help them out. Not going to put him on the Greg Hardy-type talent on the field as of, switching it. I just say you're going to trade Jared Allen for Greg Hardy, but Jared Allen's resume does speak for itself. So you are going to get a very intense and a very, active pass rusher in the game, not only with just attacking the quarterback, but what he does in pass protection as it pertains to getting up when he knows he's not going to get there, batted balls, deflected balls, even, defended balls for interceptions, him having a couple interceptions himself throughout his career. So for a D lineman, that's pretty impressive. So he's going to bring something, I think, to this Carolina defense that they needed as a pick-me-up. And for him, on a personal level, I think it's a pick-me-up. I know he's got to move pretty much cross-country, but I think the move will fit him just fine, and I think he'll fit in just right with that locker room. Like I said, going 0-3 to 3-0, it'll probably never feel better for him to get into a locker room that he doesn't have to worry about much and hear about who the starting quarterback and why they're losing by so much and why they can't even put a single point on the board in an NFL game.
Hey, relax. We're just talking about Jared Allen. Just relax, relax. Okay. interesting enough, right? I was going to, you know, kind of try and add on to the situation right behind it, but, of course, Nacho is going to be a big boy and reach all in the plates and pots and stuff like that. But here's an interesting situation. Y'all here at Sports City know I do not like to talk about my team just to remove my personal bias. But from what I've seen last night, is a very interesting situation on how they got manhandled. I'm going to say manhandled, even though I want to use other words. I'm on air, so I'm going to be relaxed about the situation. Now, here's an interesting situation that I see with Detroit. Calvin Johnson has been in this league for now 8 years. He's been in the NFL for 8 years, right? And every quarterback that he's with is giving him a chance to actually make plays in a deeper situation toward the third level of defenses, right? Now is a situation where they have an offensive coordinator in Joe Lombardi, and I don't want to put this all on Lombardi, but it kind of is from what I've seen. They had one camera view that was literally basically from either sideline. I don't know if it was from the Broncos sideline or the Lions sideline, but you see the camera, have the view on the field, and the play that they're calling, being pass plays, because they were trying to throw their way back into the game, it was taking a long time for these receivers to get out of their breaks and let the play develop. Meanwhile, the struggle for the Lions is up front with that offensive line. Now, I don't know why they can't hold the block. They brought Waddle into the game because Lucas couldn't deal with DeMarcus Ware and those guys off the edge. You know, and I don't really want to point too many fingers at Stafford, but Stafford looked very erratic in the game also. So these are some things that I've seen in the game, and I really don't want to just peg too much toward Detroit, but it is frustrating to see how this offense is putting up gaudy numbers in the preseason, even though they're playing, you know, lightly. They're not playing all out. And now this offense can't click at all. Golden Tate had a huge gain, and it's like he's closed off in the game. They brought Lance Moore there. They're not really giving him his targets. And you know, they don't give Calvin the opportunity to make those big play situations. So these are situations that I'm looking at right now with Detroit, at least on the offensive side of the ball. Now, however, you have Peyton Manning in his game who supposedly has the weaker arm between him and Stafford, and he actually was given, you know, jump ball situations with his receivers, including a 4th-and-1 play that he gave with Demaryius Thomas up against Slay. He out-jumped Slay. Slay ended up falling. It actually went for a touchdown. Now, not to say already get erratic about the situation and start throwing the ball downfield and lead everybody into it, but this has been the makeup for Calvin Johnson, especially for a taller receiver. You want to give these guys opportunities to make plays on the ball like that, i.e. Randy Moss, i.e. somebody I remember being in Detroit, Herman Moore. That was something that, even though I'm not happy about saying his name, Scott Mitchell, the lefty, would actually give Herman Moore chances to get the jump ball. Now it's a situation that that's completely out of the playbook, or they don't even want a result to go into that. And they were actually close in this game for quite a long time with the 14-12 score. They had a two-point conversion. They give it to Joyce Bell in a shotgun form, no fullback. He can't run the ball. There's a lot of interesting either play calling or what Stafford sees, if he's audibling out of this situation or what. But there's heavy question, at least from my end, on the Detroit Lions situation. And I told myself I wouldn't do that, you know, stay away from talking about the Lions. And I did want to talk about the Bears, but I couldn't talk junk about the Bears if I don't clean up my own house or talk junk about the Lions. So I'm going to throw this one around the kitchen first. Taylor, your thoughts on the Sunday night matchup, whether it's a bit of Stafford, if it's a bit of Lombardi, if it's the receivers not, you know, being comfortable with the system out of the second year. You know, the running game is a no-show right now, even with Abdullah there, where Abdullah had a couple of good runs. Jordan Bell is not running as effective as he was last season. Your thoughts on an offense that was noted to be one of the high-powered offenses in the league?
Well, you know, once we get through with the Lion therapy and bashing the Bears, we are going to talk a little bit about what happened in Washington, D.C., right? At least I hope we are. come on. We say the same thing every week. Your offensive coordinator doesn't know how to use the weapons he has. Your head coach is a dink-and-dunk guy. The pieces don't fit. Joyke Bell can't run because your offensive line stinks. Calvin Johnson does get targets because the offensive coordinator doesn't know what to do. He only knows how to target one player in a game. It's either going to be Abdullah, or it's going to be Golden Tate, or it's going to be Calvin Johnson, or it's going to be Lance Moore, or it's going to be Joique Bell. He, for some odd reason, he can't multitask. I don't know why he can't multitask, but it's apparent that he can't. Because, God forbid, he utilized all those weapons. This is not a high-powered offense. I don't know why you keep saying that. How many points a game did they score last year?
Oh, they were averaging 19 last year.
That's not a high-powered offense.
True, but they do have pieces that can conduct points. But
this is not a high-powered offense. Your head coach is Jim Caldwell. He doesn't do high-powered offenses. He doesn't do it. He doesn't do
okay,
it.
Okay. Caldwell did this with Peyton Manning for, I think, 12
years. No, Peyton Manning ran his offense. Caldwell had nothing to do with it. He was along for the ride.
Okay, so
Jim
Caldwell
had nothing to do with what went on in Indianapolis.
Okay.
Nothing.
Peyton gives him credit, though. Peyton does give him credit, though. Yes,
okay,
no.
Peyton gives everybody credit. That don't mean they deserve it.
Am I making this up? Yes or no?
No, Peyton gave him credit, but that doesn't mean he deserves it. Peyton's a nice guy. He doesn't want to say the guy's an idiot. Okay, but let's come on, man. You've seen it for two seasons. Don't tell me that you still believe in the hype about Jim Caldwell. This is what you got for an offense. This is your offense until Jim Caldwell gets fired. This is your offense. This is it. It's not going to get better. It's going to get worse because players are going to get frustrated. They're going to quit on this coach. They are going to quit on him. For those that don't remember, when he went to Baltimore as an offensive coordinator, I believe, he did not call plays. Remember?
Okay.
This is it, man, and I'm sorry, Lions fans, I truly am, because you have the pieces to do a lot. Unfortunately, until there's a regime change, this is what you got.
Okay, we do have a caller in queue calling from the state of Ohio. Doc, a.k.a. Mr. Russell, welcome to the wrap-up. How are you feeling this evening?
Hey, can I get an OH from everybody in the kitchen?
So your thoughts on what you've seen in the Sunday night game, do you agree with Chandler, or do you have a different twist to what you've seen with this offense? Do you agree that the pieces that they have don't fit the offensive scheme as well? I mean, from the game last night, a lot of questionability, and like I said, it's just like Chandler also said, the dink and dunk situation is actually kind of fitting to Stafford, because Stafford does not want to take those shots, even though he has a cannon of an arm. He will throw those passes, but once he throws a pick, it's like he doesn't want to take that opportunity again. And then he started, eyeing guys down, and it got worse as the game went on. But your thoughts on what you've seen with the Detroit Lions game in a Sunday night matchup?
No Buckeye love in the kitchen tonight?
No.
Buckeye love.
Okay. Well, here's I guess where I'm coming from on the topic here. If you have a set of players that have been around for a period of time, and you're used to a certain output and production, and then staff changes and that production goes down, you can immediately chalk it up to, or is it not as expected? You can chalk it up to getting used to a new system, getting used to new people in charge. But if it's for an extended period of time, and as fans, we're not experts, but we certainly know talent when we see it. If it's not producing, you have to then, after a while, begin to ask yourself, is it the people inside of the room scheming on Monday and Tuesday for the game plan for Sunday?
Okay. Nasser, your thoughts on the situation, depending on who you want to point the finger at, if it's a Caldwell situation, even though I know a lot of people like to be here in the kitchen, that they say they go to the head coach first and then start to fizzle things out as it goes down the road, and then, you know, is it a Lombardi situation where he's the play caller? You know, even in some of the plays that Stafford was, you know, coming out of the huddle with and throwing the passes, you know, you could see Caldwell's face cringe at what was going on out there on the field. Or do they look at number nine and, you know, question his, you know, his efforts? I don't want to say his ability because he does have, you know, a guy gets to go out there and quarterback for an NFL team. But a lot of the stuff that he was out there doing, questionable. Just to say questionable. But your thoughts on what's going on in Detroit right now?
You know, Chandler kind of hit on the head. It all starts with the head coach and the philosophies he brings in. And for all the hoopla that came with Schwartz, that offense was a high-powered offense back then. It was putting up points. And the defense was, you know, for all intents and purposes, nitty and gritty. Now, you could, like Doug just said, you could chalk it up to getting used to a new system for the first year. You could chalk it up to, you know, just trying to get used to a new coaching staff and getting used to everything and falling in line. This far into it, the fact that, you know, up until last night, I didn't see them go after, and granted it was 2 weeks in, I didn't see them go after Calvin Johnson as much as we would like to, being NFL fans and knowing that he's one of the best receivers in the league and still can do his job if you just give him attempts to get the ball. Last night, and like I said, it starts with the head coach and you go to the play caller who is probably an offensive coordinator and who we say is making all the choices. The fact of the matter is Matthew Stafford doesn't look himself. After getting beat to a bloody pulp last week, this week coming in, he just didn't look right. It just didn't look like he was that fearless Matthew Stafford that we've seen march down the field against Cleveland with a broken arm, march down the field against Dallas in the late seconds and jump over and get a touchdown when he was, you know, getting beat up in the ribs that whole game. We just didn't see that last night, that resilient Matthew Stafford who's ready to step in there and throw the ball and check it down the field. Whether it's he's dissatisfied with the play calling and doesn't like what's going on, so he is disinterested now, whatever it may be. But, you know, like we say, it all ultimately starts with the head coach and the offensive coordinator, but they're calling plays, and not for nothing, these plays aren't necessarily not all working. There are open receivers. There are times he's missing the reads. There are times Matthew Stafford doesn't pull it down and take it when he should, and things of that nature that a quarterback of his veteran status should know to do, or at least be able to get the right play call, check it down at the right time, and not check it down at the wrong time. Look for you know, the first or second before you automatically check it down. I think sometimes he's getting a little skittish. So, yeah, I'm going to put it on all three. You know, just like the situation weeks one and two with the New York Giants, I didn't put it fully on Eli Manning here. I can't put it fully on Matt. I can't put it fully on Joe. And for all intents and purposes, I'm not going to put it fully on Caldwell. So all three of them collectively have screwed this offense up and not have been able to do the right thing. They need to get on the right page and get it together.
Is it possible that these guys just aren't as good as we think they are any longer?
No.
Why is that?
Calvin Johnson is still Calvin Johnson. Golden Tate, mm-hmm. We know what type of talent Golden Tate has. We saw what Amir Abdullah can do. We know what Joyke Bell can do when they're utilized properly. So what we have is a situation where Matthew Stafford is trying to fit his square peg into the round box, into the round hole that Jim Caldwell wants him in. He's thinking a lot, Ty. That's when you see the hesitation, as Nacho was talking about. That's when you see him taking too long to make the throw, taking too long to make the read, not pulling the ball, or not even checking out of a bad play.
No, so you're saying it's all the coach's fault. You're saying it's all the coach's fault.
I'm saying that when you have an offense, listen, when you have an offense that was averaging well over 25 points a game, and a new regime comes in and that offense can't manage 20 points a game, there's only one, and all of the pieces are the same, and you've actually added pieces, then what's the common denominator with the change? The only change is the people that are now calling the plays.
Why don't you at least entertain the idea that it's possible the players involved in this situation can't grasp the concepts that are being put forth by the coaching staff?
Oh, and yeah, so which still says that there is a problem with the system, because a good coach adapts his system to fit the skill set of his players. So if I have a system that's too intricate, then I dumb it down.
Maybe they have dumbed it down. We're not in those meetings. We don't know. I mean, these people aren't, you know, like you and I who are just talking and one day get hired and,
okay,
you know,
there are,
players
you know,
don't know where they're coming from. Egos. These are known quantities.
Josh, let me tell you something. Josh McDaniel thought he knew how to reinvent the wheel. How'd that work out for him? There's a whole lot of head coaches who get jobs and they get fired because they're not willing to sacrifice their ego. My system will work. I'm going to prove it. Jim Tressman, ring a bell. Okay? It's not always, you can't say, oh, the players, the players, the players. Guess what? Sometimes a coach is so stubborn, his ego is such, Mike Martz, ring a bell, that he refuses to change, saying, no, the players have to adapt to me. The good coaches keep coaching. The bad coaches get fired.
But just to be clear, one of your points is that it's the coach's fault that the quarterback's holding on to the ball.
No, what I'm saying is that the system this kid is playing in doesn't fit him. He's trying to do things that are unnatural to him. He is not
like
used
what?
To doing.
Like, what's the difference between this system now and what was there before?
Stafford had a lot more freedom to make checks and change plays. He doesn't have that anymore. When they call a play, that's the play he has to run. Stafford now has to check down a lot more than he used to. If he throws the ball and he throws the ball wrong, he has to now, you can see him literally start looking over his shoulder, oh, what's coach going to say to me? What's coach going to say to me? So he starts thinking too much. This is not rocket science. You can watch the guy and see that he's thinking and worried about way too many things, which says that he is trying to conform to what the coach wants rather than just playing. He's thinking rather than reacting. That is obvious to anybody who's ever played a game of sports. You can see when a guy is thinking instead of reacting.
How long has this system been in place right now?
Since last season, and they're still not average. And they went again. They averaged 19 points a game last year. You can't win averaging 19 points a game in the NFL. You're not going to win.
So last year, I don't disagree with that. So last year was the first year of this new system.
Yeah.
Second year or two, still some growing pains. I mean, don't you think this is just a normal curve right now?
No,
I think it's still only one season under the belt. It would be
a normal curve if there was progression, but there is regression from the team that was out there last year, and we're going to do straight-up comparisons from the team last year in Week 3 to the team this year in Week 3. You have to look at it up and down. It's a regression rather than a progression. It's going down. It's not going up. That's why you have to say – you can't say it's just year two. That's why when I started, I said the first year you can say, yeah, it's a growing pain. But when that second year and third year come and there is no progression and all you see is regression, and then all you see is instead of 19 points a game, now it's even lower than that. And I know we're only 3 weeks in, but still, it's just a bad way of going about it if you're regressing. That's what we're saying. If there's progression, then, yeah, you say, you know, they need to get to the right page and click together, and then we'll see. But it's just straight regression. There is doesn't even look like it's going to go in the right direction anytime soon.
Well, I'm not in a position here to say that you're right or you're wrong. It's your team. You watch more of it than I do. I'm sort of making a comment that us fans tend to just pin it on coaches before we ever recognize that maybe these players aren't as good as what they used to be or what we want them to be or what we think them to be. And additionally, you know, new systems are new systems. It takes time. How much time? Every situation is different.
So, Doc, let me ask you this question. Wait. Let me ask you this question. Okay, so, Doc, since you pin it like that, right, so is Calvin Johnson not as great as we anticipate him to be? Let's do this systematically.
Okay, so how long has he been in the league?
This is his eighth season.
Okay. Don't you think that's significant?
I'm asking you the question. Do you think he's as great as he is? Because to me, and I'm biased because I am a fan of the guy, I say he's the best, or at least in the top three discussion if we're going to debate.
No, I'm not. Okay, I'll just be clear. I'm not, you know, sitting here saying Calvin Johnson is a bad player or anything like that.
No. We're going to do it systematically because I'm naming this offensive core. So we're going to do Calvin first since he's the number one option, right or wrong. Yes or no. Let me say not right or wrong. Let me say yes or no. Let me phrase it differently. yes or no, is he great or mediocre, since you're putting him in mediocre conversation?
No, I never put him in a mediocre conversation. All I'm saying is, okay, the guy's been in the league for 8 years. Is that not something to consider too?
What, so you think he's aging or has lost a step? Is that what you're saying?
Maybe so.
Because these dudes, they still have a tough time covering them. And as you can see, Stafford was putting balls in Aqib Talib's hands, and Calvin had to snatch it out of his hands. Like, literally, had to take the ball out of Aqib Talib's hands. Like, okay, but I'm going to move on. Golden Tate, is he average, mediocre? Because he turned a hitch, which is a catch at the line of scrimmage, and he turned that into a 50-yard game. Like, is he not big game capability? Yes or no?
I think he does. How long has he been in the league?
He's been in the league. Golden Tate's been in the league like 4 or 5 years, if I'm not mistaken. It might be more. He spent a good amount of time in Seattle. Just came to Detroit last season.
I think he spent 3 years in Seattle. The last year was his first year with you guys, and this will be his fifth year, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
So he's getting used to a new system. And what do you think his contributions were in Seattle? Do you think they were good?
Well, he had
he helped them win a Super Bowl.
He bailed Russell Wilson out.
And put it this way, he had Percy Harvin, him, Marshawn Lynch around him. I mean, he had pieces around him. Like his calling wasn't for him to be the number two option in that, you know, bail Calvin and Matt out. I mean, well, different. It's different compared to what he had in Seattle compared to here. You know what I'm saying?
So remember, Percy only played that Super Bowl too. Percy only played the Super Bowl, so it's not like he had him the whole season. He only had Golden Tate. That's it. And you cursed, but it was really just Golden Tate. And other receiver wise, obviously you got Lynch in the running back, but receiver or tight end talent wise, all they had was Golden Tate over there.
And won the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I'm going to keep going on since these players aren't as good as we think, right? And now we're going to look at the younger guys, because
I'm just wondering why you don't entertain that. I say it's a possibility. Like, no one ever, and I'm not just making it exclusive to this conversation, everyone's always quick to blame the coaches.
Wait. And it's interesting that Chandler hit it on, because I actually put this up as a status last night. This is the same situation that happened to Detroit about 8 years ago when Calvin Johnson was a rookie. Mike March was the offensive coordinator, and it was taking too long for plays to develop, and we had John Kitna, who does not move in that pocket, getting drilled or throwing picks left and right because he's waiting for these plays to develop. Even though Kitna came to the team and threw the most passing yards before Detroit offense, you know, ever, until Stafford came around and it changed that around, but still yet, if this is a situation where you don't have the strength up front for the offensive line, you got to simplify the situation for this offense, similar to what Chandler said, to simplify it for these players so it can work. It's not a situation where, it's just going to string out the play and sit by the wayside and hope these guys pick up a block so Stafford can be successful. He's been getting drilled for the past 3 weeks.
If you simplify it too much, you're going to make it real easy on the opposing defense to figure out what you're doing.
It doesn't matter, because you know what? You line up. I put it like this, okay? If you know what's coming, you have to stop it, period. Okay, when the Washington Redskins win games, they run the ball almost every play. They line up and they say, stop us. Most team, and when they're running the ball instead of throwing it, they win games, even though you know what's coming. It doesn't matter if the other team knows what's coming if they can't stop it. Dallas Cowboys in that first half against Atlanta, everybody knew they were going to run. Did they stop them? No, they didn't. I'll go to the flip side for you. Ryan Fitzpatrick. We all know Ryan Fitzpatrick is not the guy that you want throwing 50 times in a game because you're going to lose. He threw 58 times. Did the Jets win? No. The bottom line is you put players in positions to be successful. You adapt your system to the players. You don't make players adapt to the system. Okay? Good coaches do that. Bad coaches have multiple jobs. Jim Caldwell is on his second job. There's a reason for that.
What job is Bill Belichick on right now?
Belichick is now on his second job because he was with Cleveland, and then he went to the Patriots. and he learned
with the Jets. He was the head coach for a day.
He was never
the
head coach of the Jets.
Yeah, he was for one day.
No, not even for 1 hour. So he was never the head coach of the Jets. Well, the team never played for him. So let's not do semantics here. The team never played for him.
So he was the head coach, and he was also with that organization.
And he
as a defensive coordinator, not a head coach. So I don't think your argument holds here. I'm sorry on that.
Well, you don't have to think it, but guess what? Jim Caldwell's going to be fired soon, and he'll be looking for another job as an offensive coordinator. So it really doesn't matter.
But not for your reasoning.
If the team doesn't win, he's going to get fired. So then what other reasoning is there? The team's not winning, which means you're not doing a good job as a coach. That's how it equates. Coaches get fired when teams don't win. Right?
Is Bill Parcells a bad coach?
Bill Parcells has never been fired. He's always resigned. He's never been fired.
Okay. We'll talk about semantics.
Yeah, that's not semantics. He's quit.
Okay.
Last I checked, Bill Parcells won two Super Bowls and is a Hall of Fame coach. You telling me Jim Caldwell's a Hall of Fame coach?
Well, I'm just saying I think your argument that bad coaches have multiple jobs doesn't hold.
What I said is bad coaches have multiple jobs, yes. Bill Belichick is never going to coach anywhere else.
But
ever.
He did coach two other places before this.
Okay. Okay, let's go with what you said. He coached two other places. So his first job was
can
a training job.
A
his second job was the one
can
he got good at. No. We're going to go with what you said, right? Vince Lombardi had more than one
secret?
Job, but he only had two. Okay?
So can I let you in
let's
on a
let's play the game.
Secret?
Don Shula coached in two places.
So
okay, his second job was his last job.
Coach.
No. We're gonna play your game. His second job was his last job.
Well, I think we have to play my game because yours isn't working anymore.
Yeah, okay. If you say so, but all I know is this. Jim Caldwell will not have a job at the end of this season.
Well, you know what? Whoa. You could be right. I'm not going to argue there. You know a little bit more on that than I do. But you can't just dismiss somebody being in multiple positions as they're a bad coach. I mean, it's got to be a little bit more than that.
Okay. Relax, because I got dishes, man. We stuck on Detroit, and I don't even like this, okay? Like I told you, I don't like to discuss my team just to remove my bias. And we got caught up in this situation. Now, I do have a caller in queue. I got Pierce here out there. I do want to get to the next topic. Now, interesting enough, Nacho did bring it up about the Jared Allen situation. Now, here's an interesting situation about Chicago. That's why I said I didn't want to talk about Chicago unless I talked about Detroit because of what happened in Detroit last night. I had to get that out the way. But this is what bothers me with the Chicago Bears, right? They had 10 possessions throughout the entirety of the game against Seattle and punted all 10 times, leading to the shutout that they had last night. Now, I know Cutler's not there. I know Alshon Jeffrey didn't play. I mean, they do have, you know, their pieces there. They have Martellus and Forte as well. But how long does this struggle continue to go on, either if Cutler's at the helm or if Jimmy Clausen's running the show? I mean, literally not able to put up any points. And you could give the Legion of Boom a good amount of credit. They also got Cam Chancellor back to help out the defensive effort as well. But what is going on in Chicago? Like, I really want to see. Sirius, I'll let you spark this one up. I didn't get you on the last topic, if you'd like to get at that as well.
You know what? I'm going to let the last topic lie where it lays, you know what I'm saying? I came in and these guys are going to work. You know, I agree with all points, you know, about the last topic. I mean, some points I agree with more than others, but, you know, for the sake of time, I'm going to keep it moving. The question in Chicago is nobody knows. Nobody knows. I don't think we sat here and when John Fox got the job in Chicago, we all screamed that was a bad fit. We all screamed it from the mountaintops, you know what I'm saying? I mean, and the simple fact that they still had Jay Cutler, you know, under center week one, also screams bad fit, you know? So this team is going to struggle to win maybe two or three games the rest of the year, regardless whether, you know, Jimmy Clausen is playing quarterback, regardless of Jay Cutler is playing quarterback. You know, their defense just got incredibly weaker, you know, with this whole Jared Allen trade to Carolina and everything. So this team is in desperate trouble. So I don't know what's going on with them. Nobody knows what's going on with them.
Okay, let's throw this one around. I can just see how you feel about this one, Nacho. I know that these two have been going at it. The fire is back in the Kitchen Sports League. I'm going to just let you know that right now. But, Nacho, your thoughts on our division rival with the Chicago Bears. And, I mean, does it get any better than this? I mean, Clawson did actually start a couple of games at the end of the season last year. And him having to take over the duties while Cutler is out now, depending on how long it takes Alshon Jeffrey to get back, a lot of these defenses that play the Bears know where they're going to go while their main, you know, options or attractions to this offense are out. They're going to come after Forte. They're going to put 7 or 8, probably 9 in the box to force Clawson to win this game on his arm. Your thoughts on this Chicago offense that punted all 10 times out of every possession that they had with the football yesterday?
You know, that's interesting because week to week we talk about amazing stats like that. And if I'm not mistaken, last week the Eagles on their first 7 possessions, 5 were 3 and outs and 2 were 4 and outs. So, you know, as it pertains to, you know, that's only a couple possessions away from doing the same exact thing. So the Bears are, you know, they're not in a league of their own, so to speak, as it pertains to not being able to move the ball. Sometimes in this league, you're just totally outmatched in the game. And Seattle with Cam, the 12th man, there was just nothing that Chicago could have done. I don't even think if Jay Cutler was the starter to offset that. This offense, nonetheless, is just Matt Forte or bust. Alshon in or out, White gone, Martellus Bennett, whether he wants to show up or not week in and week out. The only consistent player that's going to go out there and give you 100% and possibly do anything is Matt Forte. Other than that, you can't count on anyone. Jimmy Clawson's going to screw you up and not be able to do anything. It's just one of those situations that's all bad from the get-go. I think John Fox, we all knew going in the situation he was coming into. No one expected him to win any games if all 1 or 2. So he's pretty much on track for what we expected. Now with trading away players and now the ultimate moves that we see him making, next year there better be progression, and the year after that, because if there's no progression next year, we're probably talking about him on the hot seat in the middle of next year if they're sitting in the same position they are this year. So he's got to do something, and in this league, it's what have you done for me lately regardless. So he's got a year now, and he's trying to set that team straight. I just don't think it's going to happen as fast as everyone would like it to, but it's really interesting to see what they got going on. The injury to Jay Cutler, I know Chandler said they would pull bench him due to poor play. I think that was coupled with it. And let's just see what happens when Jay Cutler comes back, if they look the same mundaneness or if Jay Cutler can hit these receivers. But right now it's just in the dumps. And winless until Jay comes back at least. And who knows even if then they're going to get any wins. But it just looks real bad in Chicago.
Okay, now to you two. I don't know which one. You know what? I'm going to go to you first, Doc, since you are in the Midwest region of the United States. Your thoughts on what's going on with this Bears team. And just like Nacho hit on, here's an interesting situation. Chandler says by week two or in between week two and week four that Coach Fox would end up pulling Cutler. Cutler actually is out due to injury. But looking at his backup right now, Clawson doesn't serve a good justice for this team either. So, I mean, where do they go from here? Cutler trying to get back after his injury, or if they stay with Clawson, if he builds confidence within his offense. Your thoughts on the poorest effort last night up against the Seahawks?
Well, I mean, it was more than poor effort. It was horrendous. You can't punt the ball 10 times in a game and score 0 points. That's like a practice squad out there. But with that said, I would probably give Clawson and the coaches another week here to see if they can show some market improvements. It was a difficult situation to be thrown in first start, and it's against one of the better defenses in the league. I don't think you can put a whole lot into it. I mean, you certainly know where you stand. That's obvious. A bigger question I would ask is, how in the hell does a football franchise allow themselves to go into the season with Jimmy Clawson as your backup? this guy, I thought, was proven to be a bust years ago. And this is who you rely on in the event you need to change starters or your starter goes down. So, you know, maybe it's just because the league is sort of thin at the quarterback position. You can barely field 32 legitimate starting quarterbacks. Hell, I'd say there's probably 15 legitimate starting quarterbacks in the league. So this is one of those situations where I think you have to ask that question and be honest with your players that this was actually best for them going into the season to be competitive. This is your option. That's kind of where I'm at on all this.
And it's interesting that you put that twist on it, because here's something that I just thought about while you said Jimmy Clausen's being the backup, right? Because he didn't serve well while he was down there in Carolina with the Panthers. They got rid of him immediately. So you got an injury-prone quarterback in Cutler. Like, Cutler's been injured almost every season he's played ball. And then you put Clausen behind him and think that it's going to turn out well. So that's interesting that you put that twist on that. I like it. But nobody's going to think that Cutler's going to get injured, you know, year after year. It'd be a yearly situation, but it is occurring like that since Denver up until this point now in Chicago, and he's worth over $100 million at that. Just to spice that up. But he wasn't there to ball, and just like Chandler said, he may be potentially stuck on the bench, but the way Clausen performed, I mean, it is a top three defense in the league, so I understand what you're saying, weighing the scale there. So it's interesting. Chandler, your thoughts on what went down in Seattle? 10 possessions, 10 punts, no success at all. I know this has to frustrate not only Chicago fans, but John Fox. I mean, him leaving Denver and coming to Chicago and going from, you know, Super Bowl playoff bid to this. I mean, your thoughts on what's going on with the Bears?
Well, I don't think John Fox is frustrated at all. I think this is what John Fox came here to do. And Nacho, Jimmy Clausen completed 60% of his passes on Sunday. I told you he's going to have the game of his life. No interceptions. Game of his life, I told you. This is what John Fox came here to do, Ty. We talked about this in the offseason.
Hold on. 60% of his passes completed, right? And he had under 100 yards. Passing.
Listen, all I said was the man was going to have the game of his life. He completed 60% of his passes, ain't throw no interceptions. But Jimmy Clausen, that's the game of his life, okay? Listen, we said in the offseason we were doing all our stuff. I remember saying, and I remember Nacho talking about this, that this was a rebuild. John Fox was coming here to rebuild this team. That most of the players that are on this team won't be here next season. Some of them won't be here through this season. Jared Allen's already gone. Martellus Bennett, go ahead and pack up your stuff because you're next. He's going to start getting rid of guys. The Cutler fake injury, because I still say Cutler ain't injured, okay? I still say he's not injured. The Bears want to tear this down. So you bring in a guy like John Fox who's good, who can tear a place down. He did in Carolina. He tore it down and built it back up. He did it in Denver. He got rid of guys. He brought in guys that were his guys, and they started winning. Okay? This is what John Fox does, man. He's a builder, and he's gonna tear this team down. That's why Jimmy Clausen is the backup. They don't want to win. The organization does not want to win. The organization wants to start over. The only way to start over and get the fans to buy in to starting over is to show the fans just how bad this team truly is. So how do you do that? You have Jimmy Clausen as your starting quarterback. You get rid of Jared Allen. You get rid of Martellus Bennett. And all you have is Matt Forte. Because you know Alshon Jeffrey's going to miss more games. He misses games every year, it seems like. He's going to miss more games. You already lost the kid White. Kevin White, right? You already lost him basically for the season. So
right. If
you look at it realistically, John Fox for John Fox, this is perfect. Because now he can do what he wants to do, which is get rid of all the bums that are on this team, and there's a lot of them. Get rid of all of the bums and bring in the guy that he knows that can play his style of football, which is hard-nosed, disciplined football. You're going to play defense. You're not going to turn it over. And that's how we're going to win. That's what John Fox does. That's what he does. Now, in Denver, he had to deal with Peyton once they brought Peyton in, so he had to let Peyton kind of run the show. But John Fox is a guy who's a ball-control offense guy. Jay Cutler's not a ball-control guy. Jimmy Clausen is a ball-control guy, but Jimmy Clausen's a bum. So this is what, in my opinion, this is what the organization wanted all along. They wanted this thing to be a flaming dumpster fire. They have it. Now they can start the rebuild. Like I said, I think the trade of Jared Allen was the first domino. I'm telling you, Martellus Bennett will not be on his team by week five.
Wow, already? Jesus. Okay. Dang.
Rack him up on that one.
Oh, you think Martellus is going after week five too?
I'm just saying, rack him. You make a prediction like that, you better get it recorded. Rack him up.
Oh, he's recorded. He's recorded. Listen. I don't
Ty,
challenge
my name?
Coach Jeff. Look. That's what I'm about to say. I don't challenge my coach Jeff at all. They call him Nostradamus for a reason. This dude says stuff, and it happens. It happens. I really hope he's wrong on one thing, and that's because he said the Twins would make the playoffs, and then they started flipping. So he said they might slip up. So I'm hoping he's wrong there, but it's looking like it's potentially going to happen. So I'm hoping that does happen. But he did hit the nail on the head. I think the Jared Allen move as of today is the first peg to what's going to start happening in Chicago. So I think it can get ugly. I don't think that they're going to go into any 0-16 situation or something like that. But with the two quarterbacks that they do believe in, whether Cutler comes back 100% and him giving his, I want to say, 45% effort, I mean, that's not going to get Chicago over the hump. Or Clausen's, who's still struggling to find his way up against some of these defenses throughout the NFL, I think it's going to be very tough for Chicago to get things done. And also with a very injury-prone team. I mean, even Forte's injury-prone. Forte, Cutler, Bennett, Alshon Jeffrey, Kevin White's out as a rookie. I mean, these names are big compared to what they got going on. I really think Jared Allen is in the middle of Chicago's airport right now praying to God like he's leaving. Like, thank you, to get him out of there, because it's only so much the defense could do at the end of the day. And their defense isn't even as stout as they were years ago. I had to get that out because I was just, you know, flabbergasted by 10 possessions, 10 punts. I thought that was tough. I do have serious here. Big situation with you. I think I need to save you for last. No, because Doc is here, so this could get ugly. Taylor, your thoughts on Ben going down with the MCL sprain? So it's not as bad as it looked, but a lot of people that I were, you know, was watching the game with were saying that was a dirty hit, being, you know, below the belt. You can't hit quarterbacks below the belt, a.k.a. the Tom Brady rule. And I thought it was nasty, as I see in the replay slow motion. But your thoughts on the severity of the situation, the Steelers having to move on with Michael Vick, and let me just say this right now, they do not look comfortable with Mike running the show. But your thoughts on Big Ben being out for 4 to 6 weeks?
Well, the game plan was for Ben, not for Mike, first off. I don't think it was a dirty hit. I think it was a football play. The guy got tripped going after the quarterback, and he reached out and did anything he could to take him to the ground. That's what you're supposed to do. This is football. Okay, can we take the quarterbacks out of the pink tutus? All right?
Right.
Quarterbacks can get hit, too. I understand that in this new NFL, quarterbacks are untouched. You can't hit them below the knees. You can't hit them above the waist. You can't hit them above the shoulder. You got, like, this six-inch area where you can touch them with your little finger, and if you touch them too hard, it's a personal foul. I get all of that? I get that? Okay. But that was a football play. I'm not trying to hear it. Now, Steeler fans want to call it a dirty play. Listen, if it was my quarterback, I might be screaming that too. So, listen, you're a Steeler fan, you feel like that, God bless, go with God, okay? You can have any opinion you want. I think that what Mike Tomlin said made perfect sense. He got him out of the stadium with a win. They weren't expecting Mike Vick to ever be on the field this season. Ever. Okay, Mike Vick was break in case of emergency insurance, because we all know Ben is a drama queen when it comes to injuries. You know, he's like a soccer player. You know, he'll look like he got hit by a sniper, and then 5 minutes later he's running a bootleg out the back door. All right, so like I said, I don't think they're expecting Mike to play. I think they'll look a little bit better, and all of the Mike Vick detractors, say whatever you're going to say, I don't really give a damn. I don't care what you say. Oh, he turns, I don't care. They're going to be fine with Mike Vick. They'll tread water. I had already picked Cincinnati to win that division, so this doesn't change anything in my opinion. I still think they have a shot at a wild card. I think Mike can go if Ben's out four games. I think Mike can win two games and they'll lose two games. I think he can go 500. If they go 500, Mike Vick, they'll be fine. And I think that's what they'll do. Mike Tomlin is an extremely bright coach, great guy. He will adjust the offense. They'll throw in some rolling pockets and things for Mike. And the biggest thing is I think Mike has actually finally learned, listen, stop throwing interceptions, Mike. Now, that offensive line is going to have to block a little bit better because, you know, Mike has small hands. When he get hit, he going to fumble the ball. We all know that. Mike can't hold on to the ball. We all know that. He's going to put the ball on the ground. If they can limit that, the amount of times he's actually getting hit in that pocket, I think they'll be fine. But, no, I don't think it was a dirty hit and all of that. And, you know, like I said, man, you know, I'm from the old school, man. I remember football when guys got to come on the field with baseball bats. So it wasn't a dirty hit to me.
Okay, not to your next, because I got to save Doc before you, because I know it's going to get pretty ugly with him and serious. Your thoughts on Big Ben being out for 4 to 6 weeks with the MCL sprain?
You know, to Chandler's point, and the only caveat, Chandler, is if you're old enough, according to camp, you got to be old enough to get those calls as well. And the other thing is, this is not a dirty play to me, like I said, like Chandler said. It was at least 6-7 yards away, stumbling forward, his head was down, looked up, saw the feet of Ben Roethlisberger, knows that the man's going to probably jump over him and probably get away for 15-yard scamper, so he tries to trip him up. He's able to get him, just hit the knee wrong, awkwardly, just a bad play at a bad time. That's not a dirty play at all. I didn't see it as him intentionally trying to hit his knees. He got tripped up a few yards away and did anything he could to get to the quarterback, just so happened to hit him in the wrong way. Again, Mike Vick with a lot of turnovers. I don't put any more pressure.
What is going on? Okay.
Ohio. Crossing the street.
Okay, protein matter.
Sorry, the thing is, sorry, I lost my train of thought there. I don't put too much onus on this offense to pick it up as I do the defense. We already knew the defense was going to be a little suspect and that the offense was supposed to carry it. So now this defense kind of needs to carry this offense. In the retrospect that we know that Mike Vick's going to be able to chuck the ball down the field. He can still get the ball down the field accurately. He's still got a cannon so he can make a couple of those, high-pressure gunslinger throws in the middle of the field, right to Antonio Brown, maybe Antonio can shake a couple of people and get a touchdown. The defense needs to step it up and create turnovers to match the turnovers that inevitably Michael Vick will cause, whether it be by interception or fumble. He's going to give up one or two. So the defense needs to step it up, stop some teams when they need to, and get a couple of opportunistic interceptions or fumbles at the right time. This offense has enough weapons, especially with Bell, D'Angelo Williams coming off the bench and spell for him. You also got Antonio Brown. Martavius Bryant comes back, and you got a bevy of talent around Mike Vick that you can, you know, utilize a different kind of play calling that'll be specific for Mike, and I think they'll be able to put some points on the board. Like I said, I put more onus on this defense. Pick it up, get a couple more turnovers, and try and match that turnovers that Mike Vick might or most possibly will do in those games. So I think they can possibly win 2 out of 4. If it's any longer than that, I don't know if they can go 3-3. It might be very hard for them to do that, but it'll be a tough test for them if he misses more than 4 games. But I think 4 games that can easily come out of that 2-2 and then keep it pushing. Hopefully there's no more lingering injury for Ben with that knee for the rest of the year.
Okay, Sports City, I know this could get pretty ugly, so buckle up. Doc, your thoughts on your division rival, the Pittsburgh Steelers. I know you got to force yourself to be nice, but serious is here, so I know this can get ugly. Your thoughts on Ben being out for the next 4 to 6 weeks and how they survive with Vic at the helm?
Well, first off, it was a dirty hit. The video evidence clearly shows that the defender was going after Ben's ankle. Simple as that. With that said, Roethlisberger time on the Steelers as a starting quarterback he has not started 18 games. The record of the Steelers for those 18 games is 10-8. So clearly the Steelers know they don't fall apart, put it that way, if Big Ben's not in the lineup. Matter of fact, they're just over 500. So if the guy's out for 5 to 6 weeks, I think the Steelers are going to come into this and say, look, Vic, little game plan for you. Just, you know, win three games. Win two or three games. Max, that's all we need from you. I'd have to take a look at the Steelers' next six games and see how that plays out. Maybe somebody can do that. I think it's doable, especially if they play the Browns at any point in time during those six games. They can certainly two or three.
You got a chef that probably knows all of that schedule too here.
Well, then, you know, he'll lay it out there. But it was a dirty hit. You don't like to see a quarterback go down like that. There may have even been a hit out against him. When you see the tape that I saw, it looks like it was done on purpose.
Okay, well, seriously, it wasn't too bad. At least you got a little bit of love from a Browns fan, and I know why he's actually being nice to the Steelers as of what I've heard recently. So he's being a good guy. But your thoughts on you guys having to proceed without Big Benjamin, and can Mike Vick do this work, at least like Shannon said, be 500 in at least the next 2 to 3 games? If it bends out, you know, 6 weeks, if he could win three, or if he's out four, if he could win two.
You know, honestly, gentlemen, when I saw that hit, I feared the worst like everybody else did. You know what I'm saying? Let me go ahead and address this. Was it a dirty hit? Was it not a dirty hit? It was a dirty hit. If this was Aaron Rodgers, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, Andrew Luck, the flag would have been thrown and all hell would have broken loose. But because it's Ben Roethlisberger, you know, no flag was thrown, and we have yet to get a fine from the league office about it. But, again, I digress. I'm not going to cry over spilled milk. Chairman hit the nail on the head as far as the reason why Michael Vick did not look the part yesterday. We didn't game plan for Michael Vick. Michael Vick was never supposed to see the damn field except for mop-up duty, unless he was taking a kneel down, you know, in the victory formation like he did, you know, week two when we blew out, you know, the 49ers, okay? Now, having said that, should Ben Roethlisberger miss the next four? Let's look on the high end of the next four. Those are very winnable games, okay? We got Baltimore Thursday. We come back against Baltimore, play San Diego. Very winnable game. Then we come against the Arizona Cardinals and the Kansas City Chiefs. Okay? Again, the last two games I mentioned, very stout, very great defenses that you're playing against. However, offensively, they don't really strike fear into anybody aside from the Arizona Cardinals. And again, I'm not taking anything away from the Arizona Cardinals, but they haven't played anybody. I'm just going to lay out. Okay. Now, all we need Michael Vick to do is not lose us the ball game. Okay. We got Martavis Bryant coming back next week. He'll be back on Monday Night Football against the San Diego Chargers. Prime time. Okay. Le'Veon Bell came back yesterday. Okay. Keep in mind, we are still in the hunt to get Marquise Pouncey back. You know, probably around the time when we play Oakland. So, it's very, very doable for Michael Vick to come into the system, come into the game, and manage the football game. Remember, I told you guys when we picked up the guy, should he ever get a chance to play? God forbid anything happens to Mike Vick, and thank God we picked up Michael Vick because Bruce Gutekunst is there, or he's going to be shot. You know, if we had to rely on a Landry, you know, to play these games, we would be in trouble. But Michael Vick is a proven veteran. Okay, he's been around the block a few times. Again, his skill set does not need to be rehashed because we all know what he's capable of. Again, he played last year as a member of the New York Jets and fucking beat us. You know what I'm saying? So the man can play the game still. All we need Michael Vick to do is not lose his ball game. Our defense showed up yesterday. We're going to need him to show out again. They went on the road in a very hostile environment and kept the team out the end zone. Okay, we kicked 4 field goals. Won the ball game. That's all we needed from us. That's all we needed yesterday. I don't think that our defense is going to be able to, you know, carry that forward through the rest of the year. However, we need them to step up and make critical plays at critical times throughout, you know, the duration of Ben Roethlisberger's injury. Mike Vick needs to come in and, you know, run some read option, do whatever the hell they're going to do. Again, I think Chandler said roll out the pocket and just that because the man still has blazing speed. We're playing a Baltimore Ravens defense this week who is getting shredded like sliced cheese on every defensive side of the ball. You know what I'm saying? The offense isn't really moving the ball as well. So, again, and it's at home. It's a very winnable game. You get 10 days off, come back to the San Diego Chargers team. Again, a team that defensively does not get it done. We've had tremendous success against the San Diego Chargers, whether it be in the playoffs or during the regular season. A very winnable game for us. Very winnable offensively. Again, this team really has no identity offensively. Then we start playing some heart of our lineup again with the Kansas City Chiefs and the Arizona Cardinals. Again, their defense is, again, stout, best in the league. It's very winnable. We go 2-2, 3-1, and the four games that Ben Roethlisberger's playing, we'll be fine.
Okay.
Hey, you know, before we start to get, you know, all mushy-mushy on the squealers, you know what they say?
Oh.
Karma's a bitch, and so's my ex-girlfriend. I remember in the playoffs, Kiefer Van Olhoffen, leg sweeping Carson Palmer and taking him out. So the Steelers, though it was a cheap shot, clearly, by the Rams defender, I think are getting a little bit of their comings up for the way that they've played in the past.
Wow. Okay. Any rebuttals there before I move along?
I'm not going to say it was a cheap shot by Kemo, but again, I mean, everybody's been harping on that play for years. You're going to win the Super Bowl that year, but it is what it is. You know, Kemo and Carson Palmer in a made-up and whatnot. I wouldn't say this is a cheap shot because, again, you know, at the time the play was, you know, happening, all Kemo was trying to do was get a hold of the quarterback. If this happened, you know, in today's game and your name is Brady Manning, you know, Luck, Rodgers, you know, all hell is breaking loose. But, again, you know, it is what it is at the end of the day.
Okay, fair enough. Now, I know we got to get ready to get to this game. I wanted to get Chandler's topic out because he did remind me that this is something big, and I felt some type of way. Plus, Sirius, you are down there, too. And I also want to get everybody's pick for the game today on the closeout. But interesting situation happened in the dugout at a Washington Nationals game. Bryce Harper hits a pop-up and does not leg the situation out, right? He comes back to the dugout, and Jonathan Papelbon is waiting for him and tells him to run it out. And Bryce is, you know, going back and forth with him, you know, on a little verbal altercation. Papelbon jumps down the steps, chokes him up against the wall. The teammates have to separate him. Now, I put a post up and said, that is the key to the ignition for Papelbon to end up leaving the D.C. area. I think with him doing that, basically putting his hands on the franchise, will get him out of there. Now, I've actually had some people come to me and say, well, Harper's going to end up leaving too, and this is actually a good dish to throw to Chandler that the Yankees may end up throwing him more money in New York than what D.C. could end up giving him, the Nationals. So I want to see how you guys feel about this one, at least the people that actually seen the incident. If you didn't see the incident, then I understand. But, Chandler, I'll let you spark this situation up. Your thoughts on what happened at Nationals Park.
Well, there's a couple of different things that's going around about this, and a couple of them bother me. One, the Nationals were leading at the time when this incident happened. Matt Williams pulls Harper out of the game and sends Papelbon out there to blow the game in the next inning. And when asked why, he said, well, he's our closer. Matt Williams should have been fired immediately after the game. This is part of the problem with the Nationals, why they underachieved this year, is the manager's an idiot. Okay? He's wound so tight that he choked the life out of that club. There's a narrative going around that somehow Bryce Harper had this coming, which is total BS. Okay, total BS. But another narrative that's bothered me is people brought up the Latrell Sprewell thing on Twitter and compared this and started saying, oh, well, you know, if Papelbon and Black, this, that, and the third. Listen, the narrative that's going around where Harper is basically being blamed for this has nothing to do with race. Sean King, Sirius, you probably know who that is, and Chuck D and some other people brought up the Sprewell thing. The reason the narrative on this is about Harper and not Papelbon, who is a clubhouse cancer, is because of the level of hatred and envy of Bryce Harper. The envy and the hatred of Bryce Harper's talent is approaching A-Rod levels. So Bryce Harper could go out and get mugged, and you take a poll of baseball, and you go, oh, well, he deserved it because you know how he plays the game. This kid, all he does is prepare for the game like a monster. He has to be reined in batting practice, reined in. The team actually had to – the management of the team had to keep coming to kids saying, listen, stop trying to catch every ball. Stop trying to do this. Stop trying to do that. So guess what? In a meaningless game, he didn't bust it out of the box. In a meaningless game, because they're already eliminated. He played almost a full season this year, and he's going to be the National League MVP. His first couple of seasons, he missed over 100, I believe the total was like 130 games his first couple of seasons. And all everybody kept saying was, well, he's playing too hard. He keeps getting injured. Can he stay on the field? Well, he stayed on the field this season by not always running hard out of the box on a ball that was going to be caught. Now, if you want to get into debate about you should run every ball, listen, and don't bring up Derek Jeter did not run out every ball. So can we start with that nonsense? Because that's the name of every ball. Derek Jeter ran every ball. No, the hell he didn't. I'm a Yankee fan. I know he didn't. Okay? So the reason that it bothers me to bring a race into this is because this is not about race. This is about the hatred of Bryce Harper. The fact that Papelbon is getting a pass speaks to the level of hypocrisy in baseball and just how jealous and just jealous and immature and cowardly baseball players are. It really does. Papelbon, of all people, is getting a pass for attacking the National League MVP. Jonathan Papelbon, a guy who consistently blows games, a guy who will throw a meatball pitch because he doesn't like the pitch that the umpire called a ball before, a guy who has given up on the mound, he's getting a pass for attacking the National League MVP. It's not about race. That's not why he's getting a pass. It's about the level of envy and hatred towards Bryce Harper, in my opinion. That's why I wanted to bring this up, because there's some stuff going around on Twitter that's really bothering about it. Listen, Papelbon should not have pitched the next inning. He's been suspended 4 games by the Nationals. But guess what? Mike Rizzo, the GM, is not going to fire Matt Williams, and Jonathan Papelbon will be on this team next season.
You think so? Wow.
Hey, okay. Chandler,
yeah.
Do you think this also stems from the fact that Bryce Harper had to save his own behind by mentioning that he might get thrown at after Papelbon threw at, was it Machado from the Orioles? The fact that, you know, Bryce Harper had to knowingly say, you know, how do you feel about it? Well, I'm probably going to get thrown out tomorrow night. And that in and of itself, because I'm sure if any Orioles threw at him the next night, they were going to be instantly suspended and had big repercussions for the fact that he even called it out. So he had to end up saving his own. Does anything stem from that? Is there anything from the choking in that? Because the first time I seen it, I didn't realize it was due to a pop-up. I thought it was because of the fact that not only did Papelbon put Harper in a bad situation the next following night playing against the team that he's thrown at. I just thought, did that have any effect to these two individuals and this specific thing, not necessarily just Harper?
I think that might have played into it. Papelbon's a punk. They called Bryce Harper, Papelbon's a punk. And what he did to Machado was gutless. And I don't blame Harper for bringing that up, but again, that's something else you're right, that is something else that's been held against him. Well, why would he say it? Why wouldn't he say it? It was a fact. Mm-hmm. But Papelbon had no business throwing at Machado in that situation. So, yeah, did Harper throw his teammate under the bus? Yeah, but he deserved to be thrown under the bus for doing that. And not for nothing, Manny Machado is a kid. Listen, why are you throwing at this kid? The kid has enough injury issues, and you're going to throw at him? So that may have played a part in it, yeah.
Okay, either Sirius or Doc, did you guys see the incident or hear about it, yes or no?
Well, yeah, I've seen it and I heard about it, you know, living in here, down here in the metro, you know, just talking to town. You know, honestly, I can't say it better than what Chandler said. You know, I mean, honestly, Papelbon, the Punk, and a couple of those, you know, extras that I'm gonna leave out, you know, just trying to be a family show. And you know, Bryce Harper again. I'm taking away the narrative, the fact that you know he went at the NL MVP or something like that. Because that to me is irrelevant. But this dude went at, you know, the heartbeat of a franchise for not legging out a pop-up ball. You know what I'm saying? I mean, again, each time that he went out there and blew a save, you know, or didn't protect the lead, nobody in that locker room, nobody in that dugout that we know, that we have seen, has won that pop-up bomb. But for Mary, for a meaningless game, he doesn't leg it out, and all of a sudden, pop-up bomb explodes. I mean, I think there's something there. I you know, I'm actually starting to buy into the narrative, you know, that my man threw up before I jumped in about how Bryce Harper sounded off about being thrown at because he hit Machado. And again, that may be a slap in the face, you know, that may be against the, you know, the bro code or, you know, the clubhouse, you know, rules, you know, for baseball, whatever the case may be, but at the end of the day, what's real is real. You know what I'm saying? I mean, this is a hit league, and we've all seen, you know, how baseball players and pitchers, you know, respond. You throw at my guy, I'm going to throw at yours next. That's the nature of the game. You know, so again, luckily in that case, you know, Harper didn't get thrown at, mainly because I think that he brought attention to it. You know, if Bryce Harper didn't say anything and, you know, the media didn't, you know, televise it like it did and all eyes were on it like it was, maybe, you know, Harper got thrown at. So maybe by him speaking out, he saved his own behind. But it is what it is. But at the end of the day, you know, Papelbon is a couple expletives that I'm going to leave out, like I said. And, you know, I'll be shocked if both Matt Williams and Papelbon are here next year, to be honest with you. I mean, there's been talking about Matt Williams, you know, being, you know, kicked out and fired and this, that, and the third. And, you know, Papelbon, you know, was a wild card. They needed a spot filler, you know, because Drew Storm wasn't getting the job done closing and this, that, and the third. So they went out and got a hothead in Papelbon and this, that, and the third. And back when the Nationals were still in the thick of things and in the NL chase and the wild card and this, that, and the third. But I have a hard time seeing Papelbon as well as a couple other Nationals on this roster next year. But we'll talk about that, you know, when we had his baseball show next year.
Okay, Doc, did you see the incident or have anything to say toward it?
Man, I didn't see the incident, but it sounds like to me that this Bryce Harper cat probably was running his mouth. Maybe he slept with somebody's girlfriend, and Papelbon had enough of it and, you know, took care of business how he felt he needed to take care of business.
Well, you go to YouTube and you'll see what happened, and he basically popped up a ball and didn't get down the first base line, and it escalated, to say the least. But I'll leave it there. I do want to get to this game, and I know Nacho is probably biting his nails like, Ty, hurry up, I got to go watch it. So I need plugs, closeouts from each of you, and also, who wins the game tonight? Can Kansas City go in the Lambeau and upset these Packers? I'll start with you first, Mr. Simmons. Thank you. You know what to do.
Yo, man, it's your boy Squares up in that 412 and the 703, man. Such a pleasure to be here on the wrap-up show. You know, I got this game being close today, but at the end of the day, you got to take the hottest quarterback of the game. And since Thomas Brady isn't playing, I guess the next man up will be A-Rod. So I got the Green Bay Packers winning this one. If I'm going to throw a score out there, I'm going to go 28-17. Kansas City Chiefs, wide receiver, gets in the end zone this day, though. I think the 18 consecutive game streak ends tonight. I think, you know, Macklin or somebody's going to get in that pay dirt, you know, that was the wide receiver number. So it's going to be interesting to see how this pans out, man. Y'all have a good night. I'll talk to y'all tomorrow.
I forgot that streak is still rolling with the Chiefs. Are you serious? What? Yo, listen, Alex Smith, if you don't get these receivers in the end zone, something is wrong. Something is really wrong. And he has speedsters off the backfield, so I understand. But that streak is still rolling, people. It is still rolling. There is it on a good note. I like it. Go ahead, Mr. Simmons. Go ahead, Deacon. Okay.
Crazy.
Yeah, I need plugs and close out, fellas. Mr. Silver, I'll let you go next year. You know, I'll let you get to your game. I know you're going with the Packers. Plug, close out, anything that you like to promote as well.
You know, I'm not on the box, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Great show, guys. It was very fun. I like the banner. It's awesome. Keep going back and forth. I think the number is 1,031. Let's make it 1,032 days since Aaron Rodgers throwing an interception at home. You know, it takes care of the ball and does what he needs to do. Let's just continue to keep that process going and get another W, 3-0 early in the season. Let's keep it rocking and rolling. Go Pack, go. There's nothing else. Let's take a stranglehold this division that doesn't look very tough at all. So let's go ahead and do this and end the week off right.
Listen, if you lose, the Vikings are tied with you. I'm going to just say that right now. If you lose, the Vikings are tied with you. Be careful what you ask for. Karma, just like Doc said, is a female dog. Mr. Russell, I need a plug, close out, anything that you'd like to promote, and a winner for the game tonight, Chiefs or Packers?
Well, I am the Brahma Bull of the kitchen. The best there was, the best there ever will be. The record speaks for itself. Take the Pack tonight, and they cover. Have a good one.
Okay. I think I might take you up on that. I got to see what the line looks like. Sports City, I'm flipping. I'm joking. I ain't going to touch that game at all. Mr. Knight, I need a plug, close out, anything that you'd like to promote as we shut it down here on another episode at the wrap-up.
No, a lot of fun tonight. Serious Nacho, man, you know, but for me, the ghost of Hank Stram comes on the sidelines. Fred the Hammer Williamson, you know, suddenly finds life, and he's patrolling the secondary again for Kansas City. The spirit of Lynn Dawson invades Alex Smith's body, and he starts throwing balls down the field. And I'm going with the Chiefs, man. I'm going with the Chiefs. Chiefs win.
Ooh, Nacho. SportsCityChefs.com. Check out the website, the interviews, the blog. The chefs will be back here tomorrow lighting his grill on fire at the cookout. I got more stuff to touch on, people. I did not get through the rest of the NFL, including somebody in my family that loves the Niners. I cannot wait to talk about how they are slowly breaking down badly. Like, and I said slowly. I don't know if that works out, but I tried it. On that note, tell a friend to tell a friend that it's the chef again. And if they don't know, now they know.
Somebody got a problem with hoes. What's up, y'all niggas all fed up? Cause I got a little cheddar and my record's moving out the store. Young fuckers picking at me, young rappers getting at me. My nigga Big predicted this shit exactly. More money, more problems, gotta move carefully. Cause faggots hate when you getting money like athletes. Young as ice grilling me, oh, you not feeling me? Fine, it costs you nothing, pay me no mind. I'm on my grind, cousin. Ain't got time for frontin'. Sensitive thugs, y'all all need hugs. Damn, little mans, I'm just tryin' to do me. If the record's 2 mil, I'm just tryin' to move 3. Get a couple chicks, get them to try to do E. Hopefully, they're menage before I reach my garage. I don't want much, fuck, I drove every car. Some nice cooked food, some nice clean drugs. Bird-ass niggas, I don't mean to ruffle y'all. I know you waitin' in the wing, but I'm